So maybe a first question would be, give us a state of just your tribe.
Madison has just been designated in December, Truax Field, as the home of F35A.
Doctor, can you start? Give us an overview.
27% of Governor Tony Evers' biennial budget, or one out of every $4, would go for just one program, Medicaid. Medicaid provides health care for 1 in 5 Wisconsin residents who are poor, blind, disabled, and elderly, But Medicaid costs have soared 30% in 5 years. Governor Evers wants to expand Medicaid, saying that doing that would free up $324 million in state tax dollars and net $1.6 billion more in federal aid. Wisconsin hospitals are a big part of this debate, so thanks to Eric Borgerding, President and CEO of the Wisconsin Hospital Association, to come in and talk about this big, huge issue, huge issue in the budget. Well, but before we get to the nuts and bolts of that, general question, how healthy are Wisconsin hospitals?
I'd say it's a mixed bag. There's some hospitals that are in the red and kind of trending that way. I think we had over almost 40 hospitals last year that had negative operating margins, and that's up considerably compared to about 2 years ago. Luckily, those hospitals, by and large, are parts of larger systems. So the hospitals that are doing better financially in those systems are able to help support those hospitals that are losing money. But I'd say, by and large, hospitals are under a lot of pressure, a lot of cost pressure, to deliver better outcomes like we do so well in Wisconsin at a lower cost every year. So it's a mixed financial picture, and yet at the same time, hospitals in Wisconsin are operating under increasing pressures every year.
40% in the red for the last calendar year, Eric.
About 40 hospitals. Roughly, correct.
Thank you. 40 hospitals, and that's a big distinction. Thanks for correcting that. Are those hospitals urban areas, suburban, rural?
Kind of a mix. You know, the hospitals that are sort of the most stressed financially certainly are those that are serving the highest number of uninsured or Medicaid patients. They have the higher Medicaid or uninsured payer mix, as you'd expect, because the reimbursement from Medicaid is so poor. And, of course, reimbursement from folks who are uninsured is essentially zero. So those are the hospitals, and they're in both urban and rural areas. Those are the hospitals that are experiencing the most financial stress.
And those 40 hospitals that were in the red last year, that's 40 out of how many?
About 135.
Wow. Slightly under 1 in 3. As I alluded to in my opening.
That's 2017, by the way.
2017. Thanks for that clarification. As I alluded in my opening, the cost of Wisconsin's Medicaid has gone up 30% in 5 years. Have reimbursements to Wisconsin hospitals for MA services gone up anywhere near that?
30%, no. We have made some gains over the last couple state budgets, worked closely with both Republicans and Democrats to create and then expand the disproportionate share hospital program, which has really provided the bulk of the hospital Medicaid reimbursements over the last two budgets.
Well, overall, just 10,000 foot view, what's at stake for Wisconsin hospitals in the debate, which will soon play out, over whether to expand MA?
Well, I think it's Medicaid expansion is really a complex policy question in this state. So you look at it really two ways. It's a coverage issue and it's a funding issue.
The reimbursement and the coverage.
Well, reimbursement is a part of the funding. You know, under Governor Evers' budget, reimbursement is a part of the funding that comes from Medicaid expansion. So what's at stake? I think what's really at stake is the extent to which Governor Evers' really strong budget for health care can move forward. And the question I think that's really going to be front and center is if the legislature does not expand Medicaid and does not garner those enhanced federal match, then how much of the governor's very strong health care budget will the legislature put into its version of the budget? How much of that health care budget will be going back to the governor, and then what will he do with it? I think the governor's budget has been a real catalyst for some very positive health care policy in Wisconsin. The question is going to boil down to how do you pay for it?
Right. Health Services Secretary Andrea Palm said, expansion would save $324 million in state GPR, draw down $1.6 billion in new federal money. And what strikes me is when she appeared before Joint Finance, she stressed that this additional $1.6 million would then be reinvested in health care throughout Wisconsin through long-term care, dental access, mental health, behavioral health. But a chunk of that additional federal money would go to Wisconsin hospitals, correct?
A chunk, yes.
Any estimate?
Well, let's see. I think the governor's...
Would hospitals be the biggest beneficiary of that additional 1.6?
I think that's probably the case. For hospitals, there's about a $365 million reimbursement upper in Medicaid over the biennium in the governor's budget. I'm going to start throwing about a bunch of numbers around here. So about $200 million of that... to the governor's credit, is actually intended to backfill a reimbursement cut that comes when you move, let's say, 40,000 people from the ACA exchange, commercial insurance, onto Medicaid. The difference between reimbursement and those two sources of insurance is pretty significant. So that's about that alone is about a $200 million reimbursement cut. So the governor's budget, which is about a $365 million-ish upper for hospitals, about $200 million of that is to make up for that cut in reimbursement. So when you're looking at the impact directly on hospitals, you're probably talking about a net of $165 million reimbursement increase over 2 years, which is significant. And then as far as how much of the GPR savings is plugged in, I think they plug it in kind of all over the place. Of that $365 million reimbursement upper, about $200 million of it comes from kind of recalibrating the hospital tax. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily new GPR, but recalibrating the hospital tax in a way that takes advantage of the higher match under Medicaid expansion.
The governor's proposal... The governor said it would provide better health care for 82,000 low-income Wisconsin residents, 52,000 parents, and 30,000 childless adults. Now, when I interviewed Secretary Palm, she said half of these are now on the ACA, half of them now are uninsured. Hmm. So are these uninsured a big cost? Are these uninsured costing Wisconsin hospitals a lot of money?
Sure. The numbers are kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
And that's
so it's such,
Fiscal Bureau
such
has
complex
numbers.
Issue.
It is. And you can really get bogged down in the data quickly. But the data is important. So there's kind of differing numbers out there about what the impact is on how many people would be covered by Medicaid expansion. I think there's general agreement on the fact that roughly 40,000 people are currently receiving their insurance through the Obamacare exchange. So that is commercial insurance, heavily subsidized by the federal government, at that income level, heavily subsidized. People who get their insurance now through a private sector health plan that's participating on the exchange. Then I've seen some estimates that put it, 8,000 to 10,000 might be on employer-sponsored insurance. So I think the sort of operating number generally for the number of uninsured we're talking about is I think about 30,000.
30,000.
And then you have to look at that and say, okay, now if we're just talking about what's the impact on coverage here, if it's 30,000 are uninsured, yes, that has an impact on hospitals, clinics, physicians, because that's uncompensated care. It's called charity care, a component of uncompensated care. Of that 30,000, historically, and I know this will sound strange, but something like 14 or 15% of the population today that is eligible for Medicaid does not sign up. Don't know why. So we can kind of assume that you know, that might be the same situation with this 30,000. So you're probably looking at more like 25, 26,000 people that would actually gain insurance as a result of Medicaid expansion.
Have you seen estimates of the demographic profile of these 30,000 uninsured? Are they younger? Do they think I'm not going to get sick? And then they
good question.
Do they not get preventative health care? So then when they're really sick, they just show up in our most expensive emergency rooms?
That's a great question. Well, you know, the utilization rate of the emergency room is over three times higher for Medicaid than it is for commercial insurance.
Three times.
Last data I saw was right at about three times. But to your question, I don't know. And I don't know if anyone has good data. Someone must, but I have not seen any good demographic data on either of those populations, the 30,000 that are seemingly uninsured or the 40 to 50,000 that are seem to be on private coverage. That's an important question because why aren't they, I think there's two issues there. It's why are people not signing up for coverage that they're entitled to, whether that be Medicaid or that be coverage on the exchange.
Yeah.
That 30,000 is eligible for heavily subsidized coverage on the exchange. Why are they not signing up for it? There's probably a couple of good answers for that. But we also don't know, at least I haven't seen anything definitive, about what the impact would be to the individual insurance market of moving 40,000, let's just call it 40,000 people,
sure,
off of out of the individual market.
Right.
Which is probably about, I'm going to say, 20% of the individual market onto Medicaid. Some say that that will destabilize the individual insurance market.
Yes.
And make premiums go back up again, which worked very hard to take down.
I heard Representative Nygren make that argument when the secretary appeared before Joint Finance. Excuse me for interrupting.
Yeah, no, I think it's a legitimate question, and I've not seen a definitive sort of analysis of what the demographic or health status profile is of either of those populations. So, but I think it's certainly a consideration. Would that make moving that population out of the individual market, would it stabilize and strengthen that market?
Mm-hmm.
Or would it destabilize and get us back to those spiking insurance premiums? I don't know the answer to that question.
The last time you were here, I asked you if the ACA has generally been good for Wisconsin hospitals, and you said yes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's probably been a year or more. Has the ACA continued to be good for Wisconsin hospitals?
Oh, I think so. I think the fact that we have seen insurance coverage, I think our uninsured rate is something like 5.4%, and that's about a 40-45% drop since 2013. And we're now tied, I believe, for the fifth lowest, There's about eight or nine states within that five, but tied for the fifth lowest uninsured rate. I think that's come as a combination of two things. The Medicaid expansion Wisconsin did do, so we cover everyone below 100% FPL.
Right.
And the ACA/Obamacare exchange, with its very heavily subsidized premiums. Those two things combined are sort of schizophrenic embrace of the ACA, right? Those two things combined have translated into a pretty significant drop in the uninsured rate and thus, among other things, a spike of a drop, if you will, in uncompensated care. So generally it's been positive, yes.
I'm really curious, where do we stand now? Because as you just alluded to, we did an expansion to cover everyone at or below the federal poverty limit, but we expanded without taking the additional federal money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's explain that of Medicaid costs, the federal government for Wisconsin pays 59.3% and state government pays the rest. So what about that? Did we, in effect, expand Medicaid without taking the additional federal cash?
Without question, we did. And part of the reason, first of all, there's a philosophical issue here. I mean, that is the divide.
Yes.
Let's just be clear about that.
Thanks for landing on that.
But the philosophical issue is, as it's been conveyed by those up at the Capitol, is should people who are not in poverty, meaning above 100% FPL, should we expand Medicaid to cover folks who are not in poverty? Should we put more people off, should we take people off of private insurance and put them onto Medicaid? But to get to your question, because I think that little bit of background does help answer your question, Wisconsin chose to cover everyone in poverty. Wisconsin tried, and we were a part of this, to get the enhanced federal funding for the expansion that we did do. So we added, I can't remember the numbers off the top of my head like I used to, but I think in doing that expansion we did do, what Governor Walker did was he took eligibility down from about, I think it was 200% of FPL, down to 100%.
Yeah.
Then what he did was lifted an enrollment freeze in Medicaid that had, for childless adults, that had been there since the Doyle administration. So I think we ended up moving about 60,000 people above 100% of FPL off of insurance.
And the logic there was you could apply under the exchanges, under the ACA, excuse me, go ahead.
That's correct. And then I think we added something like 120,000 people below 100% FPL to Medicaid.
Yeah.
So I think the demand for Medicaid coverage under that approach outpaced what was anticipated, that below 100% FPL population. But that's how Wisconsin approached it. It has worked. If you look at the uninsured numbers, you can't argue with the progress we've made. Wisconsin chose a different path. I think it's different than almost any other state. And quite honestly, it's the coverage approach that it's the approach we took to expanding coverage in Wisconsin that I think is the single largest policy complicator in this question.
Yeah.
If we were a typical non-expansion state going into expansion, you know, you're probably talking about eligibility cap somewhere as low as 19% FPL. So if you made above 19% of the federal poverty level, which is probably, $5,000 a year, you were ineligible for Medicaid. Some were at 50%. Some might have been at 70%. So for those states, expanding Medicaid to 138% FPL brought with it a much greater expansion of coverage than it brings in Wisconsin. So we're perplexed from a public policy perspective in that sense because of the expansion we did do in the state.
Right. And in fiscal year, let me get the fiscal year 2016-17, according to the Fiscal Bureau estimates, Medicaid cost $9.46 billion, and the Fiscal Bureau estimate is that the payment to Wisconsin hospitals for Medicaid coverage, Medicaid services, was about $2.2 billion. So my point is that the hospitals have a huge stake in this debate, correct?
Yes, of course we do. We have a stake in every single budget debate because of Medicaid and because hospitals serve everyone who walks through their door, whether they're uninsured or they're on Medicaid or they're on commercial insurance. So there's a lot of moving parts to this debate. There's the moving parts of the shift of coverage that we've been discussing. That's a significant moving part. Another very significant moving part is the additional federal money that comes with expansion that Governor Evers, despite advice he was getting from even a couple former Medicaid directors to take those savings and plow them into, you know, whatever else in the state budget, Governor Evers put those
in. Or roads or something.
I'm not going to mention it. But
I understand.
I don't want to pick any fights with anyone. But to his credit, he listened. He kind of ignored some of those suggestions instead. Plowed those dollars into healthcare, and it's about as strong a healthcare budget as I've ever seen, and I've been around for a long time.
Well, Joint Finance Democrats, Senator Erpenbach and Representative Taylor, said if we don't expand Medicaid, Secretary Palm, your whole budget unravels. That's a pretty fair summary, isn't it?
Well, I don't know, because I think that's I understand that positioning and that messaging and perhaps it's accurate. As we look at this budget and we look at the extreme or vehement, shall I say, politics that seem to be around it on both sides.
That's where we're going next.
We look at this budget. It's a strong budget for healthcare. I think there's a lot of things in this budget that both sides can coalesce around. Mm-hmm. I really do. And I sure hope that this great healthcare budget is sort of not make or break solely on Medicaid expansion, because I think that that will create a pretty difficult situation at the end of the process.
But it was one of three centerpiece issues, along with K-12 funding and transportation, that the Governor Evers would argue that he got elected on.
Mm-hmm.
So now let's talk about the politics. Governor Evers has submitted this expansion budget, and recently, as recently as over the weekend, Assembly Speaker Voss said never. But now here's what intrigues me. When Secretary Palm went before Joint Finance, Senator Darling, co-chair, asked her about the Arkansas expansion. And now in the recent Associated Press story, Senator Olson, vice chair on the Senate side of Finance, said Utah was a bit of a game changer, and that on top of Arkansas, I think we need to look at taking the federal money. So these are all elected officials that you have to work closely with.
Mm-hmm.
So
And have been.
So is your group coming in to offer some potential options? How is WHA playing it now?
Yeah, well, I'll start with the fact that this is a very strong budget, and I think that both sides of the aisle, budgets come down to priorities. And if the legislature does not take Medicaid expansion, then the question becomes sort of another one of priorities.
Yes.
And so I think it would be unfortunate if this very strong health care budget put forward by Governor Evers is either made or broken by Medicaid expansion, because that remains a very divisive political issue, clearly. I'll come back to those other states, though, in a second.
Please.
So I think that, if expansion doesn't happen, then my sense is you will see a budget that still includes a lot of the governor's very laudable health care provisions.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, will those remain a priority for both sides of the aisle if Medicaid expansion isn't there, or will other parts of the state budget take greater priority because they're going to get the GPR that's available?
Well, I want to stop you there. We are going to get to Arkansas and Utah. But I looked up the Fiscal Bureau summary of the governor's budget.
Mm-hmm.
If we do not expand, let me get the number right, the cost to continue MA over 2 years would be $353 million.
Right.
That's GPR.
Understood.
And that's squeezing these other major priorities, potentially transportation and certainly school aids. So.
Well, I don't think the governor has any GPR in his budget for transportation. I could be wrong about that.
No, but you're very right. But my point is that if you take $353 million, it's $353 million to continue Medicaid. You don't have it for K-12 school aids or the UW system or a prison system or other or aid to local governments.
You're illustrating the kind of the way that the budget's been structured, and I think it's making for a very difficult budget process and
yes.
discussion. Having said that, there's $1.8 billion in revenue growth.
1.6
in
revenue growth, somewhere.
I think it came down maybe 1.7. I can't remember exactly.
But he wants 1.5 to go to school aids. Excuse me for interrupting.
Well, I think that's kind of what I'm talking about. I think there's budgets are all about trying to find compromise, and if the legislature can't compromise around Medicaid expansion, that means they're going to give the governor back a budget that doesn't have that Medicaid expansion revenue in it. So then what happens to the rest of the budget? Then it, I think, becomes a discussion about priorities. And how do you assign weight to those various priorities? So I look at the Medicaid budget. I look at hospitals. You know, we're about, as you mentioned, $2.2 billion. I think that's probably right. Could be closer to $2 billion.
That was in fiscal 2016, 2017.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
No, those numbers change. About $1.2 billion of that is federal dollars. Another $386 million of that is GPR, which, by the way, is about 2% of the total GPR spend, and then about another $414 million of that comes from the hospital tax.
Yes.
My point being that hospitals are already putting more than 50% of the state share of Medicaid funding for their reimbursement. Hospitals are generating that through a hospital assessment. And a big chunk of that hospital assessment is skimmed right off the top, and it goes into the Medicaid budget, and according to Fiscal Bureau, it takes the place of GPR that would otherwise have to go into the Medicaid budget. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at all these numbers floating around and billions and hundreds of millions. And then we look at the fact that there's a $615 or $616 million general fund surplus. And there's about $324 million skimmed off the hospital tax over the biennium that is literally funding the general fund surplus right now. So I know it's a lot of numbers and a lot of moving parts, but my point is there's a lot of dollars floating around in this budget, some of which are being put on the table by hospitals, and at a minimum, we think those dollars should be earmarked for hospitals.
Okay, now let's take this in order of the asks of the Senate Fiscal Bureau finance members. Why did Senator Darling ask Secretary Palm to look at Arkansas? Mm-hmm. Now, I know it's a very complex issue, so give us, boil it down for us. What did Arkansas do?
Well, Arkansas, a very red state, a few years ago now, took Medicaid expansion, but in a nutshell, they did it in a way that utilizes the private commercial market to deliver the coverage, if you will. So I thought Arkansas was an intriguing idea because it could be a sort of philosophical sort of bridge, right? Theoretically, mm-hmm. where you are doing Medicaid expansion, but the folks that are coming on to Medicaid, maybe who are uninsured, would be getting their coverage through the health plans that are on the exchange now.
Okay.
And theoretically, those that have coverage on the exchange now wouldn't be shifting. They would be. They'd become eligible for Medicaid. You have to take Medicaid expansion to do Arkansas. Bottom line is it delivers the coverage through the private sector. Some have called it a private option.
Right.
So I think that's why Arkansas has proven intriguing for some on the Republican side, maybe some on the Democrat side, because it kind of marries the two sort of philosophical notions behind expansion together. Having said that, it is still Medicaid expansion. It's still, and everything that the opponents of Medicaid expansion, at least from a philosophical perspective, yep. it brings everything along with it. So if you're opposed to putting more people on government health insurance, Medicaid, Arkansas isn't necessarily the answer. If Medicaid expansion ever was going to be the answer for someone who's opposed to Arkansas, and I understand that, I think it's being discussed as a potential middle ground.
Okay.
Now Arkansas, everyone should be clear. Arkansas does not produce the level of GPR savings that is envisioned in the budget because you have to use some of those savings to buy up coverage up to Medicaid level of benefits. But, it's still probably doable and probably will still produce some savings.
But when I researched Utah to try to get ready for this interview, it looks to me like Utah just basically is seeking a federal waiver to basically get to where Wisconsin is now. Is that too simplistic a
Well,
statement?
No, I think from what I understand about Utah...
Are they really going to expand?
Well, they're required to, I think. I don't understand Utah's referendums. But it sounds like it's a binding referendum, I think. It might be just advisory, but they feel like it's binding. And so the legislature is looking for a way to implement that ballot question.
Yeah.
What Utah is proposing, by my understanding, is what you just said. Use Medicaid expansion to cover people up to 100% FPL. So actually go down to 100% FPL. And that's one part of the waiver. It's my understanding that on July 1st, another component of the waiver will be submitted, and that is to get the enhanced federal funding, that 90% match for covering up to 100% FPL.
I see.
I went back to the discussion earlier, or I'll go back to the comments I made earlier about how we'd worked hard on that to see if Wisconsin could get that enhanced federal match for the Medicaid expansion that we did do, and up till now the answer to that had been no. So I think everyone's watching Utah for a couple reasons. Number one, will the feds approve the waiver to cover at 100% FPL? And number two, will the feds allow the enhanced federal funding for that coverage up to 100% FPL? That's the hundreds of millions of dollar question, and certainly something I think Wisconsin's going to be looking at.
As you call on legislators, are you suggesting that the Arkansas model might be a better fit here as Wisconsin works through this issue?
We've certainly talked about it. We've looked at it. We've analyzed it. I think it's probably, it's getting some attention because I think people are looking for a middle ground, but I think that there's still the fundamental sort of philosophical / political question, and I don't know if that can be surmounted, which is, is Medicaid expansion, however it's delivered, right, or is it feasible politically in Wisconsin right now? And I think that's still an uphill battle, but we'll see. I mean, you're right. You've pointed out to some Senate Republicans that are floating alternatives. I think that's certainly different from where the Medicaid expansion discussion has been in Wisconsin for a long time. But again, I'll come back to what I think is really paramount, and that is this is a very good budget for healthcare. If Medicaid expansion doesn't happen in Wisconsin, I think it's important that we still recognize and advance some of those very good positive things to boost healthcare in Wisconsin. And I hope that there's a way we can get there. Don't know yet how it's going to be, with or without expansion. I think that's something that we're focusing on.
But if we don't expand, your primary concern is that the budget of joint finance comes up with this additional $353 million cost to continue Medicaid, isn't it?
Well, that's
crucial.
But that's with every budget. Yes, of course it is. I mean, every budget has these pressures. Not every budget's looking at close to $200 or $2 billion in revenue growth or $600 million surpluses. So, the cost to continue is important. Of course, cost to continue in a lot of other state agencies is important. But if we don't do Medicaid expansion, then we're kind of back to typical, if you can call that kind of revenue growth and surplus typical. Kind of a more typical budget, and then it's going to have to be what I would hope would be a cross-aisle discussion about what the priorities are going to be. And again, Governor Evers deserves a heck of a lot of credit for the budget he put on the table. I think it's well-crafted. It's a very well-crafted component of this budget. A lot of very positive things there. And my goal, the role of WHA, is to see how many of those we can coalesce around in the legislature and the governor's office and get those done.
Maybe final question. What's your biggest concern about Wisconsin hospitals looking out 5 or 10 years, especially when you hear Democrats in Washington talk about Medicare for all?
Yeah.
You wake up in the middle of the night worried about Medicare for all?
No.
No?
Not yet.
Not yet?
I think that Medicare for all is I think it's more of an indication of frustration with health care. I don't think it's a realistic public policy. The cost alone is kind of puts it out of reach.
Your biggest concerns, though, 5 and 10 years out for Wisconsin hospitals?
Right now, I mean, front and center, biggest concern is workforce.
Yeah.
And making sure that we have enough physicians, nurses, nurse practitioners, and really the whole gamut. Not just the caregivers, but a lot of the allied health professions too, making sure that we have enough of them to care for this rapidly aging, longer living population that we have. You know, we spend a lot of time on reimbursement issues, and those are critical. Here we are having the debate of all debates about Medicaid expansion. And there's some very good things in this budget for workforce as well. But that's kind of the issue that keeps most of my members and thus me to a certain extent up at night. Other issues are reimbursement from government health care programs and insurance market stability. Mm. We've made some great progress in the state in not only expanding coverage, but with a bipartisan piece of legislation passed last session.
The reinsurance.
Reinsurance.
And the governor's budget would continue that.
It would. It's there's a lot in this budget that is important and needs to be funded. That's certainly one of them. We not just because of that reinsurance program, but we went from an average premium increase in 2018 of, I think, 36% on the exchange to a decrease.
Of 6.
Last year it was 4.2, but okay. But still.
4.2 or 6,
decrease.
It's a decrease.
So that's positive, and I think three more plans came back onto the exchange. So more choice, more sort of viability of the exchange. So there's things we can do to shore up the coverage system. There's another thing in the governor's budget that I think is a bit of a sleeper, in part because the number, it's not very big, it's 1.5 million, but it's for Navigator funding. And I think another thing that both sides agree on, though it might be hard to find agreement these days, is that we need to do more to help connect people with the coverage that they are eligible for.
Whether this is the 14 or 15% that are eligible for Medicaid.
Exactly.
And aren't enrolled in Medicaid.
That's one component of it. The other is the 30,000 that are uninsured, whether they become covered through Medicaid expansion or whether they become covered under the Obamacare exchange. We have to, I think, continue doing the job of outreach and helping people connect with the coverage that they're eligible for. It's kind of nuts that we have so many people that are eligible for coverage yet they go uninsured. So I think that's going forward. That will be an important part of the budget, as well as making sure that people, giving them help to connect with, become aware of, learn how to navigate the system. Literally navigate the system and connect with the coverage that they're eligible for.
Well, to summarize, as the Republicans build the joint finance budget over the next 2 months, WHA and you are going to be offering them ideas based on some of the 37 states that have expanded. This is how different states did it.
I think those ideas are out there. People are paying attention. I mean, the Arkansas discussion is out there. Utah is now out there. So there are clearly models, should they be desired or sought, there are clearly some models out there worth looking at as it relates to expansion. Maybe within that expansion debate, but my point is, this is a fantastic budget, very positive for healthcare. We need to find a way to get as much of it done as possible.
Eric Borgerding, President and CEO of the Wisconsin Hospital Association.
Thanks.
Thank you. And once they get it resolved, will you come back and explain what they did to us?
I'll try.
Okay. Thanks very much, Eric.
All right.